Go ahead and call this session of the Kitsap County Hearing Examiner to order. For the record, today is August 25th, 2022 at 9 a.m. We have two items on the agenda this morning, and I believe we're going to start with what is listed as item A, the Pedigo Shoreline matter. Is that correct? Excellent. Okay. So the second item, just for those that may be interested, we will get to, that's the Kipperberg event venue proposal, but first we are going to hear the Pedigo matter. So we'll start there. And this is number 2003709 and 2100024, involving a request for approval of several variances from Municipal Code and Shoreline Master Program, or SMP, requirements, including a reduction in the standard 200-foot channel migration zone, or CMZ, buffer associated with Big Beef Creek, 110-foot buffers associated with an identified wetland off the property, and the 150-foot buffers associated with a Type F or Fishbearing stream that also impacts the property. And also a request for the reduction of a required side yard setback from neighboring property to the north from 100 feet to 20 feet to allow development of a 1,950 square foot two-bedroom single family residence on a 2.09 acre property with associated improvements and appurtenances within a 0.4 acre section of the property that was previously cleared at 4607 Kid Haven Lane Northwest. My name is Andrew Reeves. I'm a hearing examiner with Sound Law Center. The county has selected to hold certain land use application hearings like this one. And today it will be my role to collect evidence in the form of exhibits and testimony to determine whether this proposal is consistent with the county's comprehensive plan and other adopted plans, zoning ordinances, critical areas ordinances, and the specific requirements for approval of variances under the municipal code, as well as the requirements for approval of shoreline variances under the county's adopted Shoreline Master Program, or SMP. And because the SMP is involved, ensure that it complies with our state Shoreline Management Act, which is in Chapter 9058 of the Revised Code of Washington, as well as the Department of Ecology's adopted regulations, which are in Chapters 17326 and 27 of the Washington Administrative Code. So to that end, I received, I believe, 25 exhibits in advance of the hearing on this proposal that I had an opportunity to review. These include a staff report prepared by county staff, the application materials themselves, a no net loss and habitat management plan that was prepared for the proposal, information on the environmental review that occurred under our state's Environmental Policy Act, information on how stormwater would be addressed on site, some agency comments that were received by reviewing departments, agencies, and tribal entities related to the proposal, additional technical information, including information on the channel migration zone, final shoreline report, and information on geological technical aspects of the site, and information on the notice that was provided in relation to the application, as well as today's hearing. So I'm going to go ahead and admit those 25 exhibits into the record. Should anyone have additional exhibits they would like admitted into the record, let me know when it's your opportunity to testify, and I will go ahead and address admitting additional exhibits at that time. Speaking of testimony, all testimony today will be under oath or affirmation. That's because we're my decision to be appealed. In this instance, I believe probably to the Shoreline Hearings Board, then the recording of the hearing, as well as the admitted exhibits, and my decision would serve as the foundation for any such appeal. Finally, the order that we typically follow, and I believe we're going to follow today, is first we will hear from county staff, who will give an overview of the proposal and the review process that led us to today's hearing. After that, we'll hear from the applicant representative, and that will be their opportunity to provide any additional information or clarification about the proposal. Then if there are members of the public interested in testifying on this first matter, again, the Pedigo matter, they will have that opportunity. And then at the end, if necessary and appropriate, we'll turn back to the applicant team and county staff to respond to any such testimony. So that's the order. Thank you all for being here. And with that, not 100% sure who is presenting on behalf of the county? Is it Scott Diener or someone?
We've got Mr. Heacock in-house.
Oh, okay. We have Mr. Heacock there. I haven't seen him yet on camera. I thought it was going to be him, but.
Just one second. Just one second.
Okay, I think now, of course, now that we have him on camera, Steve Heacock's looking backward, but we'll sort it out.
It might take a second, Steve.
See a light there on the microphone.
There's something's happening.
Hey, I think that did it. All right, are you ready to go, sir?
I am. Good morning. How are you doing?
Good morning. Well, I'll swear you in. Do you swear or affirm to tell the truth in the testimony you give here today?
I do.
And if you could just state and spell your name for the audio and explain who you are.
For the record, Steve Heacock, S-T-E-V-E-H-E-A-C-O-C-K, and I'm the Senior Environmental Planner here at the Department of Community Development.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Heacock.
You bet. Well, what we have before us today, we have a couple of variance permits, actually, that we do, whenever possible, bundle those permits together in one hearing. In this particular case, we're looking at development of a vested and existing parcel in the rural area, and it's for Mr. Ron Padego. For the record, there is a new owner of the property, and that's Natalie and Philip Bonstein. So we're incorporating toward the last few weeks of processing this particular permit, the ownership changed. And so we felt it was best to just keep the application through Mr. Padego, and the actual applicant authorized agent is Ryan Crater with Crater Land Use Consulting, and also Mr. Paul Wandling, who is the septic designer and also has been involved in this particular project here. So what we're doing is we're looking at what's called a shoreline variance and a zoning variance. And we're going to walk through the PowerPoint, and then we'll get the details of that here as we go. Okay, so next slide. It's located at 4607 Kid Haven Lane. It's interesting that the undeveloped property has an address. It actually had a very small little cabin on it at one point in time. So it does have an address. It's within the Big Beef Creek system, very close, which is a freshwater shoreline. And the shoreline designation is Rural Conservancy. Okay. This is the zoning map. So you'll see where the arrow points to that roadway there, just across the road and into Big Beef Creek itself is the property in question. It's at the very end of the lane, of Kid Haven Lane. And you'll see that the adjacent properties to the north are zoned rural wooded. So in this particular setting, rural wooded adjacent to rural residential does require a 100-foot setback. That particular setback is a it's actually a relic of old forest practices where we did require in the past and still do a 100-foot setback. So just due to forest practice, general forest practices, that typically happens. So rural wooded and forest land designated zoning areas do require this 100-foot setback. And it's more so of a code related to fire safety and old logging practices where logging was not done through a lot of mechanized, as it is today, mechanized methods. But those logging methods back then were hand felling. Trees could fall on a house. At the time, it was considered that, you know, you want to make sure that you're not going to put a house in jeopardy by being adjacent to these zones. Let's go ahead and move to the next slide. This is the critical area map. You'll see it's very colorful. There are landslide. There's a moderate landslide hazard. There's a fish type creek. Obviously, Big Beef Creek is a fish creek, but it's also a shoreline of the state because its flow is greater than 20 cubic feet per second. That's the base flow. And then to the north of the property, there's also an unmapped wetland that's unmapped in our critical area maps, and an unmapped fish type creek as well associated with that wetland. And it comes from the west and north of the property itself. Let's see. The creek, as we've talked about earlier, the challenge with this particular creek system is that it is an identified channel migration zone, which means that the stream feature on this property where we have broad floodplains, the channel itself can migrate throughout the bed of the creek itself. This channel migration zone, then, we did require a special study that the applicant's professional engineer put together, and we made sure that all of the agency folks were privy to that, and provided additional feedback that was relayed to the final shoreline report that we used for the final analysis of the application. Let's go to the next slide. Here's an aerial depicting the stream channel itself. It's not exactly correctly mapped, but obviously in the surveys and things that were required for this application, it is correctly mapped. The stream generally flows from the west or the left of the photo and then goes through the site. There's a series of channels. And these channels, the channel can migrate back and forth between those two channels. At this point, what the stream does is basically flow from the west to the northeast of the property and through the property. And there's a little island that's offsite that separates the two channels, and then the two channels then come back together. A feature of note is that there's a rather significant bank that the flows into right now that's actually very close to where the road is, and it's just on the corner of the property, on the southeast corner of the property. And that particular bank keeps that channel into the and into and adjacent to the property itself, and it flows then across the wooded channel just off-site to the east, and those flows split, and again they come together. But that was the concern of the proposal, generally in relation to the channel migration zone, because we apply the buffer from the outer portion of the channel migration zone. And we'll get to that in a second. Next slide. This is the demarked line that goes right through the center of the property is the identified and the final channel migration zone that again, was analyzed by the applicant's professional engineer, geotechnical review that occurred, and that particular channel migration zone then is where we apply the buffer. So as you can see, the buffer is variable in nature, and essentially though, the buffer applies to the shoreline component of the property in this green depicted area. And then as you'll notice as well, on the adjacent Department of Natural Resources owned property, which is the rural wooded property of the subject, there is then the demarcation of the actual wetland, the pretty good sized wetland. It's a category 3 wetland that requires a 110-foot buffer. And then the associated fish type stream is also located within that wetland. And the interesting thing is that the stream itself is kind of perched, you know, within the wetland itself, and it doesn't actually outlet into Big Beef Creek, which was very interesting. Nonetheless, it still meets the qualification as a fish type creek, even though it submerges in and underneath the wetland itself. But this particular situation was, I found it very interesting being a geologist. So let's go ahead and go to the next slide. Here is the proposed mitigation and the planting plan that goes with this. We do have a one-to-one replacement, which is required for a replanting plan. So they have put together a very comprehensive planting plan for the actual application. The house originally had been moved out of the little cabin that was there. I think that basically was demolished at one point. I'm not sure when, the proposal really is located as far away from any of the critical areas that is possible in this particular case. And the interesting thing in relation to this ask is that the zoning variance, actually, the way that the zoning variance has been demarked, that we also have a component of the critical area ordinance that we are reviewing as part of this application of the shoreline variance. In that particular case, because of the critical area nature to the north, those buffers really, the buffer reduction coincides with what we're asking for in the zoning variance. So the zoning variance itself, we're asking for an 80% reduction, but that if that zoning requirement had not been a component of the adjacent rural wooded 100-foot buffer requirement, it would conform to the 20-foot side yard setback that is proposed here in this particular case. Let's go ahead to the next slide here. Here are the site photos. There's some photos of the creek itself. This is more of a low flow setting. These photos were taken, I believe, in the summer. And you'll see the stream is actually quite large in this particular setting. Let's go to the next slide. And these photos are showing both the location on the first view is the house on the photo to the left. The house will be on the right. And the photo on the right is looking the different direction. That is that big steep bank that keeps the stream in its particular channel. And the stream flows kind of bounce off of that and splits the flow into the two different channels. Let's go to the next slide. And then these are photos, I believe, these are the pictures of the offsite stream. And let's go to the next one. And then this is some photos of the wetland. It's a beautiful wetland. It is, though, going to be a variable buffer from the particular wetland itself. And, you know, we analyze that in relation to this particular ask. The ask is very minimized. There's an excellent mitigation plan that's put together. And we did feel that the applicant met all the components of the variance criteria when we analyzed, including within that is the final shoreline report that really detailed that this really is the minimum necessary to be able to afford, you know, use of the property for a residence. So in that, I do kind of summarize that we do recommend approval. As an item to note, we did also invite the Department of Ecology. As you know, the Department of Ecology has final oversight and final decision in relation to a shoreline variance. And although it's not a direct policy of the Department of Community Development, we do feel that shoreline variances should have at least an initial review by Department of Ecology. In this particular case, we had Maria Sanderko, who is our Department of Ecology shoreline specialist, and she attended a site visit with us, and also Neil Molstead, who's the Department of Ecology's wetland specialist for our area. So they both attended, including the Suquamish Tribe and also the State Department of Fish and Wildlife, attended a site visit where, you know, we discussed all of the particular situation and the ask. And in finality, we did receive a positive response from Department of Ecology that they felt that this application was passed muster in relation to a shoreline variance. And then finally, in relation to the zoning variance, we felt that the zoning variance was fitting in this particular case as well. It met all the zoning criteria. It's not the landowner's fault that this particular property had this unique situation, really, with the channel migration zone. And then finally, that there are quite a few homes in this general area. And although that wasn't analyzed too terribly well, it's apparent that there's several homes right in this immediate area. Many of the homes are larger, and that the applicant is proposing what we feel is a moderate-sized home, and we do feel it's also going to be a safe home because it's outside of the channel migration. So in summary, we recommend approval. And if you have any questions.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Heacock. Just to clarify, you testified just a second ago that there was sort of additional comments from Department of Ecology expressing, I don't know if support's the right word, but less concern. Is that in the record? I do have an Exhibit 20, and my notes indicate that this is from April 22nd of 2022.
Yes.
And they still were hoping to have additional information on who originally cleared the site and when.
Oh, right.
And whether the variance requested, and I assume that's the shoreline variance,
yeah,
as opposed to the zoning,
yes,
with the minimum necessary and why, or is right. that a different email than the one you were referencing?
Oh, right. No. No, it is that email. In the final shoreline permit, that particular situation had been analyzed. When you look back to the aerials, that portion of clearing that had been done in the past, and I don't believe that the applicant had been involved in that. There was a well installed, though, on the property in the past, and maybe what we could do is ask the applicant rep to kind of clarify if they have a understanding of that. What Ecology had pointed to in the letter, which they hadn't seen, but it's within the body of the shoreline of the final shoreline permit, is that they did pull back a couple of portions of the site plan itself to really minimize those intrusions. One of the intrusions was the stormwater system, and so they pulled back that stormwater system from its original site plan configuration to minimize the impacts even further. So that was performed, and I think to Ecology satisfaction.
Okay, and I do think we have someone from Ecology here, and we'll get there in a minute.
Yeah.
Sorry, let me just keep going through my notes here. Okay, and I no matter how many times I have looked at the exhibits, read and reread the staff report, just to be clear, we have the major feature being Big Beef Creek.
Yes.
There's a required, essentially, buffer associated with that, but I assume that's subsumed by the 200-foot channel migration zone buffer.
Correct. Yes.
I know we have a type F stream and a wetland offsite to the north.
Correct.
Okay, where I get confused is you testified to, and I've heard it, I've seen it in writing, reference to other water bodies or systems coming together and going apart. And where are these? Do they impact the property? In my mind, I'm just trying to fully understand.
Right.
You know, as you noted, when we looked at the sort of critical areas map, there's a lot of color because literally the whole site is essentially encumbered by critical areas.
But yes.
I just want to make sure I'm not missing or misunderstanding where these critical areas are.
Right, right. And the Big Beef Creek is the feature where this channel migration zone sort of meanders back and forth in this this lower topography floodplain area. It's not really a floodplain. It's specifically called a channel migration zone. Sure. The split flows are subchannels of the same stream, so it's all part of Big Beef Creek. The channel migration zone itself, the line that's on our site plan, is what's shown as the actual buffer point in relation to Big Beef.
Okay, so right. Sorry, I think I've been getting confused with use of the word stream when we're talking about Big Beef Creek
right.
versus unnamed Type F stream up
yes.
north. But my understanding is Big Beef Creek would essentially, the creek itself is in the south, sort of mostly south and a little bit toward the east portion.
Yes.
And then when you say it splits, that's the little island it goes around.
Yeah.
But then the CMZ boundary essentially starts from, you know, maybe the ordinary high water of Big
yeah.
Beef Creek and extends on the property. So the whole fact that Big Beef Creek splits is interesting, but
yeah.
it has zero impact for purposes of my understanding what's happening. Is that
yeah,
accurate?
Yeah, exactly. And okay. I'll add to that.
Okay.
In relation to the current ordinary high water line, yep. that's a different matter. The channel migration zone is a analyzed zone of worst case scenario in this particular case that the channel could theoretically migrate that distance. But that's the important thing is to understand that in the analysis that the geotech had performed, that the residents or the proposed residents is never going to be at that risk. And
got
so
it.
In this case, that's why we felt it's so important to analyze the application for that component as well. It's a geotechnical requirement
right.
In relation to our code under 19400. Yeah.
Got it. Okay. So yes. you've got essentially the potential for significant alluvial drift or whatnot, such that that point that is identified as the boundary, that's as far as it's been determined that Big Beef Creek might sort of jump course
yes.
To the north. And then there's, you know, a buffer associated with that.
Yes.
Which the buffer, the primary buffer that, well, I guess the buffer really does encumber the entire property.
It,
looking at this.
It does. It
okay.
does indeed. Yes.
Got it. Okay.
Right.
So I think I've now identified. So the really, even though it splits around the island, we've got Big Beef Creek. I'm
yep.
going to treat that as one water body. We've got the CMZ. Those are the two things that are actually on the property.
Yes.
In some way, shape, or form, and then off-site to the north is where that Type F stream and that wetland are, and
right.
those are the critical areas features that I should focus my attention to, correct?
Yes, yes.
Okay, good. I think I get it now. I think it was talking about a stream and a creek and them splitting. Really, that was all Big Beef Creek
yeah.
versus what was happening north, and I think that's where I got confused.
That's great.
Okay, thank you. And just to clarify your testimony, when you use the term shoreline of the state, Big Beef Creek is not a shoreline of statewide significance, but it does fall under the county shoreline master program.
That's correct.
Okay,
yes.
Just wanted to make sure.
Yes.
I didn't misunderstand that. Okay. I think five of my questions were related to that same issue, so we've addressed that issue. Sorry, just going through all these. So you mentioned there was an existing structure, but we don't know when that was or when it got rid of, and we
yeah.
don't know when the site was originally cleared. Certainly it was before the brand new property owners,
yeah.
But sometime we think in the somewhat distant past.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Let's see, going through here. And then I think I probably confused myself in terms of what I was looking at. Can you just clarify for me where the driveway, where the access to the property was? I think I got mixed up with topo lines. It's not going over the septic, right? It's somewhere else.
Yeah, the driveway itself does come onto the property. There's a small portion of roadway that will need to be developed to get right by the house. And then they've identified, as we require, three parking spaces that's associated with the residence. And obviously a small little turnaround, you know, so people can pull back out. But the existing road at the road end of Kidhaven Lane does come onto the property. And that's essentially, I think, where the well had been drilled in that location. It's more toward the kind of the central portion of the property itself.
And does it come from the does the existing road come access the property ultimately from the west, or does it come down from the north?
From the west.
Okay.
Yes.
But okay. I think I must have, again, with the amount of sort of buffers and lines, and
yeah,
I think got confused by some topo lines that made it seem to me that the driveway was coming straight over the reserve septic field.
Oh, yeah, no.
I assumed that wasn't accurate.
Yeah, so correct.
Okay, good. Glad we cleared that up. All right. No access issues. Here we go. And then I know that the Skokomish had some specific thoughts about use of the well, and they were hoping that stormwater infiltration or infiltration would be used as the method for stormwater, and that the 2019 DOE manual would be used.
Yeah.
Is that the manual that is currently being used by the county?
Well, the county actually has their own stormwater design manual, but it's basically using the DOE methodology.
Okay.
And in this particular case, they are going to be proposing infiltration into the ground. The Skokomish concern had been, would there be a direct discharge to the stream? And that is not what's proposed. That's further away anyway.
I guess I misunderstood. I thought their concern was using the well on site and not having any kind of hydrologic recharge. Did you do that differently?
Well, there will be recharge from both the drain field and infiltration of stormwater too into the property. So,
right.
You know, you would see that as a net zero, relatively, other than evapotranspiration or evaporation. You know,
okay.
But in this particular case, though, you know, and I think I pointed out in the response matrix that it's the County Department of Health that actually approves wells, and the installation of wells really isn't in the purview of DCD to be able to control nor regulate. It's through Kitsap Health Department. So,
sure. While I certainly am aware and understand the in-stream flow rules and the very complex interaction with tribal rights, nothing I, the meager hearing examiner, ultimately would have the power to rule on. But okay, thank you for clarifying that.
Yeah.
And just to be clear, I know WDFW had commented at one point they wanted a geotech, but I think the geotech had already been done. They just hadn't seen it. Did that Is that what happened there?
Well, that then was later refined as well.
Okay.
And provided, you know, to them also, yes.
Right, and that was the avulsion issue of the stream.
Correct.
You know, don't build stuff
in harm's way.
When a fast-flowing body of water might move. So, okay. So
correct.
Okay, got that. Sorry, almost through my notes. It's just, we got a lot going on.
It's a complex.
Yeah. Okay. Figured that out. Okay, I think then that addressed the questions I had specifically for you, Mr. Heacock. Were there other members of county staff you wanted to call on before we turn to the applicant?
No, I think we're set there.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Very good. So is it Ryan Crater? Is he here today on behalf of the applicant? He might be the Ryan that's the attendee, or is he?
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah. What's that mean? Thank you.
And so if Ryan Crater is here, if that's the Ryan that has been added to the panelist side, you'll have to unmute yourself. And just in case folks are joining us late, to be clear, we have two items scheduled at 9. We're on the Pedigo item. We'll move to the wedding event venue item, Kipperberg, after this. But. Okay, so not sure if that is the Ryan we are trying to find. Was Paul Wadling in the audience? Did I hear that?
Yeah, he's on his way up.
Okay. Hi, thank you for being here. I'll swear you in. Do you swear or affirm to tell the truth in any testimony you give here today?
I do.
Thank you. And could you state and spell your name for me?
Paul Wandling, PAULWANDLING.
Thank you, Mr. Wandling. And again, I wasn't sure if, have you been in contact with Mr. Crater? Were you planning on him being here or representing the applicant? Or
he was going to be online. I don't know that he's had planned to speak or not. I'm not 100% sure on that.
Okay. Well, ultimately, it is the applicant's burden in all such permits. But again, at this point, I will see if you had any thoughts, clarification you wanted to provide in relation to the proposal at this point.
So the I was initially on site with the project with the previous owner, Ron Pedigo, and the site was an old farm site. Was overgrown. There was remnants of original structures. There was aerial photos of original structures, and there was a lot of cleanup that occurred. It was all overgrown with brush and blackberries. So at the time, Ron had the property cleaned, and we coordinated that for him. In general, the site plans are the smallest use of the property. It seemed like the most reasonable use of the property that was possible. And the drain field, of course, encumbers a lot of what you can do on the buildable area of the land. And then you've got the driveway that, of course, encumbers a lot of the usable space as well. So the footprint really is the smallest possible use of the property. And in general, what's been shared in testimony so far, there's no issues with what I've heard. So everything seems to be accurate.
Okay. And did you have an opportunity to review Mr. Heacock's staff report and the conditions of approval that were recommended by county staff?
No, I haven't.
You have not, okay. What I would suggest, and if, again, Mr. Crater is here, we will try to hear from him at some point, but we're going to go to members of the public next, but if you're able to look at those, or if you have the applicants themselves there with you in the room, have them look at those, this would be the best time to see if there's any clarification, concerns, et cetera, related to the recommended condition.
Okay.
So at this point, what we'll do is we'll go to members of the public that might be interested. I don't know if we have any in the room there. Ms. Walston, has anyone signed in? Or? And I do see Mr. Molstead wants to speak. I was going to go to those on Zoom next. So we will certainly come to you shortly, Mr. Molstead. But anyone in the room? I didn't hear. No, okay.
No,
excellent. So we'll go to Neil Molstad, who I believe is with Department of Ecology.
Yes, that's correct.
Great, thank you. Do you swear or affirm to tell the truth in the testimony you give here today?
I do.
And if you could just state and spell your name for me.
My name is Neil, N-E-I-L, Molstad, M-O-L-S-T-A-D. I am a wetland specialist with the Department of Ecology.
Great, thank you, Mr. Molstad. And I believe I had already discussed an email comment that you had provided somewhat recently, but this would be your opportunity to clarify, provide any additional thoughts.
The only thing, I just wanted to make a quick correction of the record. Mr. Heacock stated that I have been on site at a previous meeting. Perhaps Maria Sandrico was at that meeting. I just wanted to correct the record to reflect that I have never been on the property.
Okay.
So just wanted to make a quick correction there.
Sure. And then, thank you. And then just while I have you, the sort of questions or concerns that were raised in that email, in your mind, have they been addressed at this point?
I would... I do think it's important, and I'm not sure, you know, if the decision comes to me for review, you know, that's to be determined. But what I will say is if it does, I would like to see the property in person.
Okay. But, okay. And when you say comes to you, the decision will ultimately go to Department of Ecology.
Correct. Right. But whether I'm...
Variant. But whether right. You are the specific reviewer, you don't know yet, is what you're saying.
Exactly. Exactly.
Got it. And it's hard to speak about these things when you haven't been on site.
Correct.
Okay. Anything further you wanted to add, Mr. Molkan?
Nothing else at this time.
Thank you. Okay. And then we do have a few other attendees. If you can use the raise hand feature to indicate if you're interested in testifying about this first matter. That feature is right at the bottom. Okay, looks like, back to the panelist side. We've got Robert Hankins. Hi, thank you for being here. I'll swear you in.
Yeah, hi.
Hi, do you swear affirm to tell the truth in the testimony you give here today?
I sure do.
And if you could just state and spell your name for the audio.
It's Robert Hankins, R-O-B-E-R-T, Hankins, H-A-N-K-I-N-S.
Great. Thank you. And your relationship to the proposal?
I am the county engineer plan reviewer.
Okay.
I did not prepare the document that was prepared for this, but now that I'm looking at it, I'm looking at the plan, and I'm seeing that we talked about an infiltration system being put in place, and the plan that I'm seeing by Paul Wandering shows dispersion trenches. So that would be a sheet flow dispersion versus an infiltration. And depending on the soil types, it most likely will infiltrate, but I haven't seen what the soils are. So then we would require the geotech to confirm that sheet flow dispersion is an acceptable means and wouldn't cause adverse problems.
Okay, so to be clear, yeah, I do recall also that initially the way stormwater was being addressed was sort of, you know, collected mostly from the roof of the house, and then it would disperse, I think, toward the southeast, if I remember right, maybe I don't, but versus an infiltration where you would maybe have a trench of some kind where the water would kind of get put more directly into the ground. Is that?
Yes, that's correct. And you talked earlier about where the well is located versus have an infiltration or groundwater recharge, something like that. I just wanted to make it clear that according to the plan that I'm seeing currently, it shows dispersion.
Right. And I assume additionally, were this variance and shoreline variance to be approved, the actual further review of stormwater would occur with building permits. Is that right?
That is correct.
Okay. Great. Thank you. Anything further you want
to add? No, just wanted to clarify that.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. And again, we'll see. Do we have any other folks that were interested in testifying on this first matter? You can use the raise hand feature. Okay, well, if I can go back to Mr. Wanling, I don't know if you had enough time to review the recommended conditions on behalf of his clients, but I thought I'd at least ask him if he had any thoughts on those.
Yes, I have reviewed the conditions, and they seem appropriate. They're okay. The conditions that we discussed earlier through the review process, and I don't see anything added here that I wasn't aware of.
Great, thank you. And then while I have you there, because I assume you have at least some knowledge and expertise as someone that deals with septic, but in terms of what Mr. Hankins just testified to, do you have any clarification on how stormwater will be addressed?
Yeah, so the flow dispersion process that's proposed meets the county's stormwater requirements. It's a prescriptive stormwater flow, and the dispersion trench is specifically sized based on impervious surfaces that drain into it. The soils there are highly pervious. They drain very well. They're really free draining. They are shallow, however. I mean, they do hit a restrictive layer at about four feet deep. So any water that runs off the site will collect in that soil, but the distance from any surface water is such that it'll never come to the surface and never create any sort of direct discharge. It'll always be conveyed and trapped in that soil.
Okay.
Yep.
Great. Thank you for clarifying that. And finally, I assume anyone that wanted to testify would have raised their hand by now. Finally, we'll go back to see if Mr. Heacock had any final thoughts on behalf of the county before we conclude this first matter.
Well, I got to apologize to Neil because I was pretty sure he was there, but I do think that it was one of the Fish and Wildlife representatives that had been there. So many site visits.
Sure.
But, in relation to the drainage, I do recall seeing originally that the proposal was for infiltration. I can also substantiate what Mr. Wandling had said in relation to the soils on the property. They are very porous, gravelly soils, and in this particular case, I agree with him that dispersion will have the same net effect that an infiltrator would in this particular case. And in fact, maybe even would be spreading that water in even a further area than a strict infiltration would, especially with a combining layer of the soils. And I appreciate him discussing the situation with this being an old farm. I do recall that now, that it was an old farm. It's part of the Kid Haven farm, I believe. And I do remember now hearing them talk about that these were blackberries and other invasives that were there on the property that were cleared. So, and we didn't feel that there was any direct critical area problem in relation to that clearing, as I recall that conversation out on the site. But I do recall that was discussed. Yeah.
Great. Does that then conclude thoughts on behalf of the county on this first matter?
Yes.
Great, thank you. Sorry, one last thing just to verify. The number of exhibits I had was 25. Did that track with what you were hoping I would review?
Yes, that's correct.
And also one other clarification, the two permit numbers, I've seen them in two different places, but is it one is 20-03709 and the other is 21-00024?
That's correct.
Okay, great. Thank you for clarifying.
You bet.
Okay. So I will take this under consideration and the testimony I heard today and the exhibits that have been admitted into the record and produced. Well, we do leave the record open in Kitsap County for one additional week when we use the remote formats or hybrid formats so that if there are any folks that were unable to participate because of tech issues, they could submit written comments in lieu of testifying. But essentially, the record will close a week from today, and I will produce a decision within 2 weeks after that on this proposal. So thank you, everyone, on this first matter. And I don't know, do we need a minute to get prepped for the second matter, or...
I'm ready to go when you are, Andrew.
Okay, that's Mr. Pop. All right. Okay. Get my caffeine. One second. Okay, here we go. As to the second item on the agenda, and this is the Kipperberg event and wedding venue and accessory dwelling unit matter. And it's numbers 2104111, 2103049, 2102413, and 2100036, involving a request for approval of, quote, all necessary permits, end quote, to operate the Edgewater Wedding and Event Venue and allow occupancy of an accessory dwelling unit, or ADU, constructed previously without benefit of permits, on a 5.87-acre property at 11967 Luna Vista Avenue Southeast in the Olala area of the county. And more specifically, this proposal would require a conditional use permit, a shoreline substantial development permit, and a shoreline conditional use permit, I believe, all related to the wedding and event venue, as well as an additional conditional use permit specific to the ADU. And then I note that the wedding and event venue previously did have a CUP, I believe, that was obtained through an after-the-fact process back in 2014 with a different hearing examiner, but that was revoked in 2018. So that's the background there. I've already introduced myself, Andrew Reeves, for those that may have come late. And ultimately, my job today will be to collect evidence in the form of exhibits and testimony to determine whether this proposal should be approved. And in advance of the hearing, we'll talk about exhibits, but 31 exhibits was the initial number that I had, including a staff report prepared by county staff, various project plans, quite a few of them specific to the ADU, some additional site information, various revised narratives, a revised SEPA checklist, ultimately a revised mitigated determination of non-significance, or MDNS, issued by the county, and information on the notice that was provided in relation to the application as well as the hearing. And then I believe Mr. Palmer, on behalf of the applicants, submitted a memorandum that I did not review yet because I only got it a few minutes before we started today. And then I think there was one additional comment, public comment that came in. So with that, we'll go ahead and start with county staff, and I'll get Colin Pop sworn in. Ms. Pop, thank you. Do you swear affirm to tell the truth in the testimony you give here today?
Yes, I do.
And if you could just state and spell your name for the audio recording.
My name is Colin Pop. I'm the planning supervisor for the Long Range Planning Division with Department of Community Development, and that's spelled C-O-L-I-N-P-O-F-F.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Pop. Please proceed.
I'll be giving a presentation today with the help of Scott Diener as well. I was wondering if it would make sense to go ahead and swear Scott in as well, as he'll jump in kind of halfway through.
I think that would make sense then. So we'll get Scott Diener sworn in as well. Appears to be unmuted at least.
Yes, I'm unmuted, and you can see me now, I hope.
We can see. I was going to say, we don't need to see you. I thought maybe you were wearing a prettier tie and you didn't want to embarrass me, but we will get you sworn in. Do you swear or affirm to tell the truth in the testimony you give here today?
I do.
And if you could just state and spell your name and explain real quick who you are.
Sure. Scott Diener, S-C-O-T-T-D-I-E-N-E-R. I'm the manager of development services and engineering for Kitsap County Department of Community Development.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Diener. Okay. So if you want to launch your PowerPoint, go right ahead.
Sure. Amanda, can you? There we go. Yeah. So again, my name is Colin Poff. I'm the planning supervisor. I'm with the Long Range Planning Division. I was previously with Development Services Engineering. And this has been reviewed for some time. As you noted, there are multiple permits, kind of multiple aspects to this. Scott Diener and I will give a presentation today on those that kind of go over. There's a consolidated staff report that you have that has all permits, and this presentation will go over kind of the primary issues, summarize the primary issues from that staff report. So this is called the Kipperberg Event Venue and ADU. I have listed here project number 21-04111. That is for the conditional use permit, which is kind of the lead permit for this, but like I said, it's consolidated. You already gave a little description of the proposal, but I'll reiterate that this proposal is to operate a primarily outdoor wedding venue and event venue for both ceremonies and reception. Indoor areas would be used primarily for a dressing area, incidental activities, and a warming kitchen. Unless other permits, future permits allow further activities.
Mr. Poff?
Yep.
My apologies. You turned your head for a sec there, and we missed about a sentence or so, at least I did. You were about to say indoor, something about the indoor, if you could just repeat that.
Sure. Am I too quiet, or is it just that it went out?
I think it was you turned your head, maybe, and that did it, but
sure.
Yeah.
Okay, no problem. Yeah, so it's a primarily outdoor wedding venue. For both ceremony and wedding and event venerable ceremonies and receptions. Indoor areas would primarily be used for dressing area, incidental activities, and a warming kitchen unless further permits allow more in the future. There's parking proposed for this event venue, which is provided on a separate parcel located to the west of the event venue parcel. So guests would park there and be shuttled down from the parking area down the hill to the home. In addition, this proposal includes a conditional use application to allow the occupancy of an existing accessory dwelling unit. That's 860 square feet, so that is an after-the-fact permit for an existing ADU. And that's located above an existing garage directly to the west of the primary residence. So that's what we're going to discuss today. The property address is 11967 Luna Vista Avenue Southeast, Olalla, Washington. Parcel is 5.87 acres in size. It is located in a rural area. Because of that, we do require a type 3 review of this application with approval by the county examiner. I believe that we went over the record. I just want to make sure that we have it all. There was one additional public comment received yesterday. I believe you got that. We'd also like to add to the record, we'll mention in this presentation a two-lot short plat. And so we have that short plat document as well to add to the record.
Okay. That has something to do with this property. I don't recall anything about that yet. So,
yeah, it has to do with the parking lot parcel. Okay. That has a two-lot short plat with the parking lot parcel and the vacant parcel directly to the east of that. So there might be implications for that two-lot short plat because of the use of the parking on that lot.
Okay.
So, and we'll discuss that a little bit later on.
Sure. So just real quick. So if we could make, I guess, 32 would be the additional public comment from yesterday. You said 33 was going to be a two-lot short plat information.
Yeah.
And then I know short plat info. I'll make 34 the William Palmer memo. Okay. Right. Go ahead.
Great. Sounds good. And I just want to mention, too, that there one of the submittals was a, I can't remember which exhibit it is, it's a parking agreement. We noticed that that is illegible, not able to really read that. So if needed, we can ask for a better version of that to just simply replace that one.
Yep, let's plan on that. That was one of my notes was that exhibit only had, I think, four words I could read. So,
yep, apologies for that.
No problem.
Moving on to the next slide. So that's the description of the proposal. Again, there's a few facets of it to discuss. After going over this and going over with the applicant, the most effective way or what made the most sense was to do a combined review of the necessary permits to operate. Title 21, 2104-180 allows us to do concurrent review. And so I'll go through what the different permits that we're discussing today are. The conditional use permit is to operate the event facility within a rural area. The accessory dwelling unit, again, within a rural area requires a conditional use permit. So we'll cover that as well in this presentation. There's also a shoreline conditional use permit. This is within the shoreline designation. And that's because of the type of use that it is as a non-water oriented commercial use. It requires a shoreline conditional use permit. So there's a criteria of approval for that as well. And lastly, shoreline substantial development permit. And I'll mention that the first three are type 3 reviews that require a hearing examiner approval. SSDP is administrative, so it does not require hearing examiner approval, but we've just wrapped everything together with the higher order permits here. On the next slide, just to introduce who we have here today, the applicant is listed as Marilyn Kipperberg and Josiah Kipperberg. And then on behalf of them, the agent listed as William Palmer. A few notable dates, complete application from August 5th, 2021. We did do a notice of application, so that'd be one notice for all the permits on October 7th, 2021. More recently, in May, we issued a CEPA mitigation determination of non-significance. And following that, we we withdrew that CEPA MDNS, and we issued a revised CEPA mitigation of determination of non-significance. And that one is a little more detailed and also includes code citations to some of the mitigation measures that you'll see in that CEPA. Within the review period, we received three public comments. One of those is the recent one that we added to the record, and we'll discuss those later on in the draft section. So before we get into some of the details, just some context about the zoning and where this is, the location and things like that. This is in the south of the county in the Olalla area, the South Kitsap Commissioner District Number 2. So you can see it pointed there, there along the shoreline, south of the Southwick Ferry Terminal down in the Olalla area. On the next slide, this is more zoomed in. The parcel highlighted here is the 5.87-acre parcel where the home is located and where the events take place. To the west of that highlighted parcel would be where the parking area is, and I'll show that on the site plan later. But this is the parcel, and it is a developed site with an existing single-family residence and that detached garage where the ADU will be. Those are in the eastern half of the parcel, more towards the water. The remaining area within the parcel is undeveloped. Along the northern reach is Luna Vista Avenue Southeast, going down to the property. And then there on the residential frontage, there's a yard area, a coastal dune area, and of course the shoreline. And then within that shoreline area, there's a fire pit, small arbor, golf driving tee, and a single path access. The undeveloped lot that I mentioned for the parking is to the northwest, 2.47 acres in size, been used for parking and shuttling down to the property. And worth mentioning that where that parking lot is and where the home is quite steep. So there's a kind of a long winding road that the shuttle goes down in order to access the site. So yeah, quite a steep slope there. Moving on to the next slide. Same thing, this is just the area. You'll see it's off of Luna Vista. Nearby major roads would be Banner Road Southeast and Olalla Valley Road Southeast. And then quickly on the next slide, more zoomed in here. You can see there directly to the south is Anderson Point County Park. So this is the zoning map. The area in general for a long way is all rural residential there in green. And then there in purple, you have the park zoning, which is directly abuts it. And there's actually a trail going along pretty close to the property line for Anderson Point County Park that terminates, again, down by the water, pretty close, I want to say within 100 feet of the property line. So worth mentioning that. And again, since it's rural residential, that's why we're here today for conditional use permit for event facilities and for the ADU. Next slide is our critical area map. This pink and kind of orangish color show steep slopes, erosion hazard, landslide hazard areas there. And of course, there's the shoreline as well as a type N stream map there. Next slide. This is from their habitat management plan. Because of that adjacent shoreline that they submitted a habitat management plan, this is also a good view of the site. it shows the single family home there, the garage there directly adjacent to the west where the ADU is. You can see to the west also Luna Vista Avenue Southeast winding down kind of that slope to access the site with the parking area there directly to the west of the single family residence. And then other developments near the shoreline. It's a pretty open yard area there near the arbor. There's the arbor, a cleared area for a beach and fire pit. There's a golf driving pad, and an access trail there on the site. Okay, next slide. So along those lines, again, there were some discussions early on and for some time about shoreline permitting. This was originally looked at as our shoreline management plan program didn't really have this listed as a classified use. Originally, that's how we looked at this. Discussions with ecology, this is actually considered a commercial non-water oriented use. And because of that, shoreline conditional use permit is required for those types of uses. And also a shoreline substantial development permit, which again is a type 2 administrative permit. As a conditional use permit and as a commercial non-water oriented use, there are some requirements. One of those would be the Department of Ecology talked about requirement of signage. So we have a condition revolving around the public access of the beach and signage for that, as well as replanting of areas that had previously been affected by the driving pad, the fire pit and beach area that had been created, and the arbor as well. So removal of those structures and replanting is a requirement as well. And they provided a habitat management plan, thoroughly describing the shoreline environment. That was a requirement. And they also provided a geological letter due to the steep slopes there. The next slide. And here's the site plan. Again, this is showing two parcels that are highlighted here. You can see the 5.8 acre parcel there on the water with the access and undeveloped area on the west, and then the single family home. But then the other parcel there showing a 55 stall parking area where guests would park on that lot and then be shuttled down. Next slide. So real quick, kind of before we move on to the event venue itself, it makes sense to separate kind of the ADU application. So I'm going to have a few slides just discussing the ADU. So this is where it's located in that existing garage structure. And then on the next slide, this is what that structure looks like. It's has a garage at the bottom with a couple floors above, and it's separated kind of into two spaces, which on the next slide I'll show. Here's the floor plan, and we have split spaces here with an office and hobby space there on your right, and the ADU on the left. So by the way, the ADU is limited to 900 square feet maximum size, so they meet that requirement. The floor plan show that the ADU is 858 square feet. That office and hobby space, condition of approval has been added that a stove is decommissioned, kitchen stove is decommissioned, so that we can say that the ADU, you know, the maximum habitable space is 900 square feet, and that's fully contained within the ADU space. Next slide is just the elevations. This is the single family home. As you can see, there's architectural similarities between those two structures. Again, this is after the fact, but we still look at those consistency with that requirement for aesthetics, and that there's similar style construction, fish roof, horizontal siding, similar window trim, and a clear similarity in kind of that base first floor material that they've used. And so just a quick conclusion for the ADU on the next slide is, here's again, but just for reference, the elevation of the garage structure. And so this proposal, specifically in regards to ADU, it needs to meet that conditional use permit criteria. And so we've shown that here, that it's consistent with the comprehensive plan, compliant with applicable regulations in Title 17 for that special use of an ADU. It's compatible with the characteristics of the subject property and immediate vicinity and not materially detrimental. So it would be compliant with the codes and regulations for ADUs, compatible with the surrounding area and consistent with that. CUP criteria specifically for accessory dwelling units. So with that, we'll move on to kind of discuss the event venue portion of this. And I think this is where Scott Diener will take over for a few slides.
Thank you, Colin. So, yes, I'll speak about the event venue, and I've got a handful of slides to go through. So, in terms of the slide 17, are you showing that, Amanda?
No, just 1 second. I'll pull it back up.
Okay. And I can speak at the same time. So the proposal is to operate a primarily outdoor wedding and event venue for both ceremonies and receptions. Indoor area uses are confined to the first floor and are used primarily for a dressing area, incidental activities, and a warming kitchen. Parking is proposed to be provided on a separate but adjacent parcel to the northwest. Guests will be shuttled down from the parking area to the home. In addition, the proposal includes the ADU that we've talked about, so I won't go over that. By way of background, the venue has been in front of DCD several times with revocation in late 2018 due to failure to follow conditions of the 2014 approval, as was previously noted. Next slide, please.
Sorry, is this the right slide? What are we?
So the next slide after that, and keep going.
That's the end.
Oh, that's...
What figure are you looking for? I don't have numbers on this one.
Is that the last slide?
Here we go.
Okay. So, okay, I'm going to speak to now the access and parking, and we're on track. So the starting point for the access is west of the site at Luna Vista Avenue Southeast. The driveway traverses east down two switchbacks, and overall the driveway drops 310 feet in elevation over approximately 2,600 feet. The adjacent parking and shuttling lot is accessed from near the terminus of Luna Vista Avenue Southeast. Next slide, please. So I wanted to talk about the parking because the applicant has expressed prior concern about DCD's review and conditioning surrounding the parking lot. It's a short exercise for DCD to establish its position, so bear with me while I go through this. As the only proposed use on the westerly parcel, the use table at Kitsap County Code 17410 would identify the principal and only use on the parcel as an off-street parking facility, which is use 278 in the rural residential section of the use table at 17.410.042. We don't have a definition of this use specifically, and in this case must then consult Merriam-Webster as advised by Kitsap County Code 17110.005, which is the section of code that directs how to define words or phrases that are not otherwise defined in Kitsap County Code. However, searching for a complete definition of the phrase off-street parking facility does not provide a contextual definition. And the same code, 17110.005, also read, where terms, phrases, and words are not defined, they shall have their ordinary accepted meanings within that context with which they are used, end quote. When we apply that exercise, we see that the proposed parking is both off-street as opposed to on-street and a parking facility. It's perhaps noteworthy that a facility can include the land upon which the use is occurring. And finally, U.S. Legal Incorporated at uslegal.com provides further guidance, reading, and I quote, a parking facility is generally defined as any building, structure, land right-of-way, equipment, or facility used or useful in connection with the construction, enlargement, development, maintenance, or operation of any area or building for off-street parking of motor vehicles. So with this, DCD believes that the proposed use is an off-street parking facility that is not permitted by itself in this zone. However, DCD notes that if the parcel is aggregated to the southeasterly venue parcel, the proposed use would become an on-site and accessory use to the principal use of event venue. The Declaration of Aggregation, or also known as the Declaration of Single Lot Line, is a form that the assessor provides to merge parcels and is pretty simple and inexpensive to do so. DCD notes that the west parcel is part of an approved two-lot short plat with its cohort lot due east. It also has a reserved drain field for the east lot. And when you look at the exhibit, you can see kind of on the where it's colored red, the very northwest corner of that parking lot is where that reserved drain field easement is, just below the number 021 in that corner. So the applicant is encouraged to address parking on this easement, either by avoiding the parking on the easement, likely with a barricade around the drain field, or to abandon or relocate the easement. DCD is flexible in how this occurs, but is asking that if the easement is kept, that a durable barricade or fencing be placed around the easement to protect the soil integrity. This would be an additional condition not identified in the staff report and could conceivably impact a number of parking spaces. Finally, the applicant is being asked to provide a visual screening of the parking lot along its southerly lot line in order to mitigate the impact of the adjacent neighbor to the south, whose residential development is pretty close to the parking area. The fence should go along the length of the parking, but does not need to drop down over the slope. Next slide, please. We've got three comments received so far. You can see the first two, and I think we may hear some testimony later on as well, but these first two are rather self-explanatory. We did receive a third comment. We got it by email on the 24th of this month, yesterday, which has been provided to the hearing examiner. The letter expresses frustration with their experience next to a currently operating venue. Noise is the main concern, and its potential to be disruptive beyond the property, including, in this instance, impacts to the rural park, as well as concerns about current enforcement limitations. Next slide, please. In very recent times, DCD has questioned and has itself, let me start over. Recently, DCD has had questions and has itself questioned the role of event venues in rural Kitsap County, which has a land supply of approximately 85% of its lots considered non-conforming lots of record. So lots of small lots in rural Kitsap. Recent attempts at limiting event venue activity using the vested code in rural Kitsap has had mixed results. However, for this application and a handful of vested event venue applications moving forward, DCD is conducting a thorough review of its code, comprehensive plan, and goals and policies, and believes that we have positioned ourselves well to moderate event venues in these rural residential zones. This slide is covered in greater detail in the staff report and is taken from the current comprehensive plan. The first bullet emphasizes that rural areas have overall character that should be both enhanced and retained, which seems to promote or suggest a balanced approach to development. The second bullet notes compatibility with rural character is important and that permitting shall recognize this. The third bullet notes that many persons in rural Kitsap enjoy it for its rural setting, for typically rural reasons. And the fourth bullet speaks to an overall as well as quiet atmosphere. Next slide, please. This slide demonstrates some of the policies in the staff report, which are from the comp plan as well. Policy 51 promotes allowance of uses in the rural residential zone that are consistent with rural character. Policy 57 notes moderating commercial uses in rural areas is supported. Policy 58 notes moderating businesses outside the limited area of more intensive rural development, other rural zones, to protect rural character. And Policy 59 allows commerce that does not impact rural character. While there are additional discussion goals and policies noted in the staff report, these may be the most relevant to the rural character. Next slide, please. So when considering the comp plan narrative, goals, policies, and the intention of the rural zones, DCD summarizes the occurrence of events at venues in rural Kitsap as non-residential uses that cannot overshadow residential uses nor the intention of the rural zones. DCD believes that there is no argument that one use overshadows another if it's limited to 50% of the time available. Making the schedule the same month after month, for example, beginning the first or last Friday, further lessens the overall impact and makes the schedule predictable and memorable for neighbors who may wish to plan for peaceful enjoyment of their own property on certain weekends. DCD believes this approach is a reasonable middle ground and allows the applicant beneficial use of their property for commercial events. It's also noteworthy that the home is not precluded from being used for vacation rentals at any time, which allows further use and commercial benefit of the property. Next slide, please. Noise is arguably the most levied complaint of event venues, and DCD has learned that the county and the applicant must be very specific in how noise will be managed, particularly amplified noise. Simply saying noise will be managed without demonstrating how it will be managed is not adequate, especially when the noise limitations are pretty substantial and somewhat easy to violate, especially with amplified systems. The current noise ordinance limits the rural residential zone to 55 decibels at the receiving property or at a point at which the noise exits the property between the hours of 7 a.m. and 10 p.m. Most sources categorize 55 decibels as the sound of a refrigerator operating or a similar soft appliance noise. The noise ordinance also prohibits noise traveling and being understood at a distance of 50 feet or greater. Both of these noise ordinance requirements can make it difficult to contain amplified sound, especially when adjacent to property lines or on small parcels. The applicant hasn't demonstrated how sound would be moderated, and the SEPA mitigated determination of non-significant reflects that a path forward involves noise monitoring, assessment, and analysis. ECD is open to amplification of sound, but only when it can be demonstrated that it will be compliant with the noise ordinance. And Mr. Hearing Examiner, it's worth noting perhaps that I have personal experience at the park as well as comments given to me by an adjacent neighbor who is outside the notice radius but has observations on the venue. Anderson Park has one of the nicest white sand beaches in Kitsap County. I visit the park occasionally, sometimes a couple times a year, both by boat and in person. I have personally witnessed the sound well leaving the park, including last summer where I also met with the applicant, Josiah, in the park while a wedding was occurring. The music was quite audible to me at a distance of approximately 150 feet off the property, and I have no doubt that it would have been heard clearly much further away.
Sorry.
There's also a neighbor who lives on the south end of the park, an attorney, who has commented that, and I quote, "You know it is loud when you can hear the words to the music." And this is in all likelihood due to the flat park with no real attenuation and the slightly bay-shaped nature of the park, and that sound travels well over water.
And Mr. Janer, to be clear,
yes.
You were there last summer. There was a wedding on this property, even though the CUP was revoked previously?
Yes, and I would suggest that that there be questions for the applicant about the ongoing nature of weddings and the difficulties that they've had in canceling those. But that's our understanding that weddings have been occurring.
Okay.
So next slide, please. So DCD is recommending 59 conditions of approval plus one additional condition. The ADU conditions are standard and include the decommissioning of the second above garage structure, which was originally also constructed as an ADU, a second ADU. DCD is requesting for protection of the reserved drain field in the northwest edge of the parking lot if the easement is to remain. The applicant may choose to abandon the easement as an alternative. DCD is also requesting lot aggregation for reasons discussed earlier, as well as screening for the neighbor to the south. There is a condition that the parking lot will require a site development activity permit under the current stormwater code, which considers the parking lot a pollution-generating surface and in need of drainage control. There are conditions that will allow that will require the dune grass to be replanted and signage that notes the shoreline is for the public's use. Next slide, please. Additional conditions speak to necessary permits prior to any use beyond incidental or the warming kitchen. This would include permitting and additional review for use of any bedrooms for overnight accommodation, use of the second story and its deck, and conversion to a commercial or a catering kitchen. The building and fire safety division has also conditioned for an emergency response plan prior to assembly or use of the home. Finally, there are conditions designed to mitigate impacts to neighbors and park users, which speak to the amount of days available for events, hours of operations, and as noted in the mitigated determination of non-significance, that amplified sound is prohibited at this time. And I will now turn it back over to Colin.
We just have only a couple slides left. That is the bulk of our discussion and our presentation. I think it hits on summarizes the main issues that are in the staff report. So basically, just want to go back to kind of the conclusion here. And again, that's that we have we've looked at the ADU, and then Scott described the wedding venue. And with the wedding venue, we are looking at a recommendation for the conditional use permit for the event facility use in a rural zone, as well as a shoreline conditional use permit due to the fact that it's within the shoreline jurisdiction. So first, for the event facility, Scott gave a brief discussion of a few of those conditions of approval. As you'll note, there's actually 59 total. But with those conditions of approval that we're recommending, we would recommend approval of the CUP. Here's the CUP criteria consistent with the comprehensive plan, compliant with requirements of Kitsap County Code and of other applicable regulations, that it's compatible with the characteristics of the subject property in immediate vicinity, and not materially detrimental. And then lastly, on the last slide, is about the shoreline conditional use permit, which has some similar criteria, but also, of course, criteria specific to the shoreline management program. And that's in Kitsap County Code 22-500-100D. There's A through H. I have A through C listed here. But our review of the shoreline conditional use permit would be that it's consistent with the policies of RCW and the Shoreline Master Program, that the proposed use will not interfere with normal public use of public shorelines and does not conflict with existing water-dependent uses. Again, this is a commercial non-water-dependent use. And that the proposed use of the site and design of the project are compatible with other authorized uses within the area and uses planned for the area under the comprehensive plan and this program. And then there's a few others as well. For example, the public interest suffers no substantial detrimental effect, and that we've given consideration of the cumulative impact of actions in the area, and that there would be no, it would not result in substantial adverse effects to the shoreline environment. And so with that, we find that the ADU and the event venue are consistent with the comprehensive plan as with our recommended conditions, as well as the shoreline conditional use permit. If you have any questions about the conditions of approval beyond what we've discussed here, please let us know. But with that, we'd like to recommend approval, and that's the end of the presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Popek. It's not really the conditions of approval, more just a review process, exhibits. So I guess my very first question was there a thought process into why the previous CUP was not included as an exhibit, or the revocation? Was that just, we're starting from scratch, we don't want the hearing examiner to sort of focus on that? I mean,
I can take that one.
Mr. Diener, go ahead.
Yes, sir. So there's quite a storied history behind the event venue. It began with the code compliance in 2012, and then shortly after, the applicant argued it was a home business. The county said it was not a home business. They argued it should have been subject to an administrative conditional use permit. That was argued before the hearing examiner, and they did not prevail. They, under protest, came in for a conditional use permit, there was a number of conditions that needed to be met, including principally getting the accessory dwelling units above the garage and unpermitted development in order. And after a couple years, that still had not occurred. And so the county, after, you know, trying, I think, fairly hard to get compliance, realized that it had no choice but to seek revocation. And that happened. And I think there was also a subsequent penalty after that where they continued to have a wedding as well. So we sat down with the applicants, and we basically agreed that we cannot continue to operate this way, that we can't continue to have them, the applicant, having weddings that are not permitted, that there is a way to get them to yes, but that it's got to be comprehensive, and it's got to be in earnest, and it's got to be recognizing that everybody's going to have to give a little here, and that there are some issues that need to be addressed, some which weren't addressed in the original 2014 application, which were missed by the planner at the time. For example, the intrusion into the dune grass vegetation. So we sat down, and after kind of many months of going back and forth, agreed that we were going to start fresh, that we needed these applications, but that we were going to put everything else behind us, and that we were going to move forward with a brand new application. Do our best to minimize our involvement with the event venue once it's underway. And an example of that is that the prior 2014 approval had a requirement that the applicant advise us of when they were going to have their no more than 20 event venues in any calendar year. We found that calendaring effort was quite a burden for both the applicant and for DCD to manage, partly, I guess, because of the nature of the wedding business. And so we wanted to come up with a new process that would sort of set them free, but have firm bookends on what they can and cannot do, and be very deliberate in its time frame for performance, especially as it regards permitting, additional permitting, building permits. For example, if people want to stay in the house overnight, then there are some additional permitting requirements. If there is a commercial kitchen that is warranted or wanted, then there is a permitting requirement for that. So we have kind of laid all our cards out on the table and attempted to basically start all over, as you mentioned, Mr. Herringer.
Okay, so sorry. So I heard you, but ultimately the decision was, because we're starting over, let's not include historic information that was the same type of use in the past. That's what it was surprising to me not to see the CUP that was for a wedding venue and the decision to revoke it. That's all. I just was a little confused as to why that was not included in the record, but if you guys think no reason for the hearing examiner to read that, then fine. I just wanted to make sure that was an oversight.
It was not an oversight. Many of the conditions that you see today are similar, or perhaps identical, to conditions that were assigned in 2014, and certainly would in another opportunity want to learn more about providing prior code compliance activities for these kinds of applications in the future.
Sure, but I mean, this wasn't just code compliance. There was a CUP that was revoked, correct, Mr. Diener? Like,
yes,
and now they're applying for a CUP. That's fine. Okay, moving on from that question for either of you, I guess one of the challenges I've been having in my review is, well, first off, what is the complete application date? Is there one? Is there four? How is that being addressed? Mr. Poff had a date, I believe, on the PowerPoint that was different than the one I had written down. But
yeah, I would have to go into. But we, you know, there are multiple permits, and it did take quite some time to actually get all of the required permits, and we made it very clear that we wanted it to be considered comprehensively. We didn't want to move forward with a notice of application until we had a full application package of all the necessary permits. I think the date that you see there is the date of kind of the lead permit, the conditional use permit. And so that's why there's only one date listed. But I do think we kind of received necessary documentation kind of at different times as we worked with the applicant to get everything together.
I understand it's an iterative process. The challenge from a legal perspective is at some point there's a determination this application is complete, and if there are any vesting issues, that's the date that really matters. I ask because from what I can tell, there have been, you know, changes, some seemingly quite significant to both the municipal code and I think even the SMP since this started. But I ask this because Mr. Diener's explanation of parking sort of threw me to the extent that one of the things I was worried about, and I hadn't thought through the dates, was that my read of the code would be that parking would be outright prohibited as in this zone, and that there was a specific definition for an off-street parking facility without need to go to Merriam-Webster's. But maybe that, what I found in the code is the newer version, not the current version. So that's what I was a little confused by, because I can give the site if it's helpful. We're in the rural residential zone, I believe.
Yes.
And the site, you know, the table I looked at, I think. Let's see, where did I go? Of course, now I'm going to get totally lost in my notes. I'll get there. Give me one sec. It was 17410. These are the allowed uses in the rural zone, rural residential, and then I just went down to 278 for off-street parking facilities, and then if you scroll further over, there's definitions of off-street parking facilities, but those facilities are listed as prohibited in the rural residential zone. So that was the first confusion I had, to the extent that I don't know how, even if you short plat somehow combine or consolidate this, how that addresses that issue. But Mr. Diener, can you speak to whether I misunderstood or has the zoning code changed where that provision I just cited is newer than this application, or I misread your code?
Yeah, I'm happy to try and walk through that a little bit more. So the application is vested to the prior zoning code. There is no definition that I've been able to find anyways of off-street parking facility.
So the prior, that's the key. So I don't have that. So maybe if there's a way I can get, you know, a version, some municipal codes you can scroll through and find older versions. So anyways, the provision that I was looking at is not applicable in your mind because this vet.
Well, let me just say that the version that was adopted and effective recently in June of this year, there have been no changes to the permissibility of off-street parking facilities in rural zones. They're simply not allowed. However, if you have a use like an event venue and you have that parking occurring on site with that event venue, then that parking really becomes accessory to the principal use of the event venue. And that's what the lot aggregation would accommodate. Okay. Is it would make it one parcel and it would make the parking now accessory to the event venue. That's our understanding of how the accessory uses work in tandem with principal or primary uses.
Okay, so sorry, just trying to wrap my mind around this. So the now we would have a, you know, same idea, but 55 potential parking spaces would then, rather than be treated as an outright sort of thing in their own on that separate property, that now becomes an accessory use, and I assume there's some provision in the code that makes that true. I haven't seen it, but maybe I'll, when I review your testimony, that'll make more sense to me. So essentially we have a residential property that has a side use as an event venue 50% or less of the time, which is commercial, but then there's also an accessory side use to that, which is the off-street parking, and then an accessory dwelling unit.
Yeah.
Am I grasping all this?
Yes. Yeah.
And if I may, I'll point out too that I don't know if it's helpful, but there is a definition of accessory use.
Okay.
Accessory uses are permitted in that rule zone. It's 17.110.030, which is a use commonly associated with but subordinate to the principal use. So the reason it's prohibited in rural residential is, you know, because of the thinking of a parking lot, standalone parking lot, by itself on its own parcel. Or if they're aggregated, you could say that it's a subordinate, you know, kind of necessary part of an event venue to have, obviously, to have parking space.
Thank you, Colin.
Sure. Okay. And then I guess to the same effect, in terms of the SMP, you know, my understanding is we're here in the Rural Conservancy, and my own sort of, you know, review was that commercial uses like the one proposed, let me give you the site, 22600130, essentially 130B sub 8 is that non-water oriented commercial uses are prohibited unless one of these sub-criteria are met. I didn't see any of those sub-criteria are addressed anywhere. So again, is that a new version of the SMP, or am I misunderstanding the SMP?
No, well, I will say that they are actually vested to an older SMP. However, that part of the code has not changed. So this section right here about commercial uses is the exact same in the vested version as it is here. So that's if you go up to, I think it's in the use table, talks about commercial uses, and there's a footnote that says non-water oriented commercial uses can be permitted with a SCUP. What you're looking at here are commercial development standards. And we have, and there is some discussion of that in the staff report, so I would mention that as well to review. So, but also that there's no new development that's taking place at this time, but that basically, I mean, I think there are some discussions with the Department of Ecology about this, maybe even preceding kind of my time with the permit. I don't know if God's able to unearth any of that, but basically that it could be permitted as a conditional use, given that they had the signage that allowed public access, and as well as kind of no net loss of shoreline functions, and they are removing some of those developments that exist there, like the arbor and the fire pit and things like that, and replanting. So that was our understanding of the allowance of the commercial of this as a commercial use, kind of coming from those previous discussions with ecology.
So that condition. Mr. Poff, that footnote you referenced says see commercial development. And then it goes to the thing I just referenced. And so essentially you can use a SCUP to get approved commercial development, but in my mind, you've got to meet the criteria of section 2600130, and under B8, this would be outright not allowed. So that's where I'm struggling.
I understand. I think I've described it the best that I can. I think I would, I don't know if there's any, I would again, I think that this was kind of discussed again with the Department of Ecology, and they are a final review on shoreline conditional use permits as well. So I would note that they have, we have to file with the Department of Ecology for their final approval.
Sure. I mean, I need to make a decision as well, and that's what I'm struggling with, but I get what you're saying. I'm just a step along the way. Mr. Diener, do you have any thoughts on that issue?
No, we struggled with that a little internally as well. I do recall that there was a meeting in June of 2019 with the applicant, the assistant director, and ecology, where there was, I think, some real reluctant support. And at the time, they said the best that we could do is to support this with signage that would allow the public shoreline access. But yet, when we go to the code, which, you know, as Colin pointed out, remains unchanged, there is that schism, there is that friction that you see between the table that we relied on, as well as that section 130.
Okay, so maybe then is the idea that under B8C, sub C, that if you have signage, you now have a mixed-use project. I don't know how we have water dependent, but it would provide a public benefit. I never mind.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't understand how to read the code is probably how this works. So we can move on. And the applicant, I'm sure, can speak to it. I got quite confused as to why this would be allowed at this point under the SCUP. But that's fine. Okay, moving on. So the parking, oh man, Mr. Diener, it would be very helpful to me ultimately if you could prepare either just a very short memo or something that ran through what you testified to. Because again, I was relying on the newer version of the code, and it didn't occur to me to run to Merriam-Webster's. So I think that ultimately would be helpful if we could include that, if you're willing to do that, Mr. Diener.
Absolutely.
Okay. And just on that parking consolidated issue. Okay, let's see. And in the staff report, I believe, sort of went through a concurrency analysis, but it did it for the ADU. But to me, wouldn't the traffic concurrency problem be for the event venue, not for one person visiting the site, or did I also misunderstand that?
I'll take a minute to look at the look at our notes on concurrency in that condition.
And while you're looking, I guess the other question I had is, the municipal code seems to have a definition for an event facility, but that might be brand new.
That is new.
Okay, that is new, and that's not applicable to the current proposal. Okay, just wanted to make sure I understood that. Okay.
I think I'll get back to you on the concurrency question.
Go ahead, Mr. Pop.
I'm sorry about that. I think I'll need to get back to you on the concurrency question.
Oh, sure. Well, and I think lighting also was analyzed in terms of the ADU, but not in terms of the event venue, which confused me a little bit as well. There was a lot of focus on the ADU, I think, and so maybe it was just the way things were numbered. In the staff report, I might have got confused. there. Okay, let me see other questions. In terms of SEPA, the SEPA MD&S was not appealed, correct? And we passed that appeal deadline.
That's correct.
Okay.
If it's helpful, we could use a 5-minute break for tech.
All right. Yeah, I was about to finish my questions, and so why don't we do that? Why don't we take 10 minutes? It's been 2 hours. We'll take 10 minutes. We'll come back, and then we'll have Bill Palmer, William Palmer, come at that point on behalf of the applicant. I'll be ready for him at that point. Does that work? I know you got to reset the audio. Sorry about that.
That's all right. Thank you.
All right, everybody. We'll be back. Thanks.
Recording stopped.